Welcome to Module 4, Programming with Apex. As we start to dive into Apex, we are going to largely focus on what makes Apex different than C# or Java. To lay the foundation for understanding Apex, you need to describe key aspects of Apex that differentiate it from other languages, such as Java and C#. Describe why Apex transactions and governor limits must be considered when writing Apex. Execute simple Apex, and use the S object data type, the primitive data types, and basic control statements in Apex. This module will cover the following topics. Getting started with Apex. What makes Apex different? And working with S objects. Let's begin with getting started with Apex. Apex is Salesforce's cloud-based, object-oriented programming language, specifically designed for customizing and extending apps on the force.com platform. This means that it is proprietary and won't run on other systems. The language is a component of a rich platform. As you've already seen, when you create an object in the declarative interface, you automatically get a database table. Since Apex is part of the platform, the language has the facility to directly access the data in those tables and manipulate it. You'll find the language is plugged into other features, for example, Visual Workflow, a declarative tool that can be configured to invoke Apex. This fact will be key for your understanding of how Apex works. The language is also multi-tenant aware. No one's code will be able to monopolize resources or cause the system to fail. Apex is designed to work effectively and efficiently in a multi-tenant environment when developed using recommended design patterns. All Apex code is saved as one of two things, either as a class, which is Apex code with members such as attributes, properties, and methods that can be instantiated into an object, or as a trigger, which is Apex code where execution is automatically triggered during the processing of DML, data manipulation language, events. Apex classes, triggers, VisualForce pages, and VisualForce components are saved with information about the specific Salesforce API version with which they will be compiled and executed. By saving a version number with code, Salesforce guarantees your code will function each release, which happens 3 times a year. Note that version settings are not related to file versioning provided with tools such as source control tools. So, where is your code? Code is saved as metadata on the platform when it successfully compiles. Then, the Apex environment retrieves the compiled code when it's needed. Note that Apex code cannot be executed off the platform. Also, anonymous code is not saved. It is immediately sent to the Apex environment for execution. Notice the types mentioned here. These are called primitives in Apex. They are more like wrapper classes in Java. Like all Apex variables, if you don't assign them a value, they are initialized to null. Note that all Apex variables declared as any data type, whether primitive or non-primitive, behave as objects. Apex uses traditional control statements, if and if-else conditionals. While and do-while loops evaluate some conditions. As long as that condition remains true, a while loop will continue to iterate. For loops will be the primary structure you work with in Apex. These will be covered several times throughout the course. There are different types of collections within Apex. There are lists, sets, and maps. Lists are ordered, indexed collections of elements. They can be sorted and can contain duplicate values. Sets are unordered collections of elements, but cannot contain duplicates. Maps are collections of key-value pairs where each unique key maps to a single value. Now that you've got a sense of what will be familiar to you in Apex, let's start to look at some differences that you need to understand to write code successfully on the platform. An Apex transaction represents a set of operations that are executed as a single unit. These are not database transactions. The code in the execute anonymous window is not complete until method 1 is complete, and method 1 is not complete until method 2 is complete. The method calls are placed on the stack and removed from the stack. Let's look at a transaction that involves DML. An Apex transaction that contains the execution of a database modifying statement also contains the execution of logic, such as a trigger, implicitly executed by that modification. In this example, Apex is invoked through an execute anonymous window. The method is called and explicitly executes an insert statement. From this point, the system processes configured business logic, such as triggers and workflow, following the steps in the order of execution. Next, the insert implicitly invokes a trigger, causing a workflow rule to fire. Notice the ellipsis. We are inside a process, and it keeps going. When writing code, you can't anticipate all that will happen on a DML operation. Moreover, some actions may cause a refiring of a trigger. This can lead to the refiring of the trigger again, and so on, leading to recursion. Understanding that this can happen and coding to it is an important step in becoming an accomplished Apex programmer. One of the reasons understanding Apex transactions is so important is due to governor limits. All code must execute within those limits, and many limits are based on an Apex transaction. All Apex execution is bound by governor limits that the system enforces on operations to ensure resources are available for all tenants. Because you cannot know what other Apex code will be run as part of your transaction, you must write your code with optimization in mind. Think about the number of queries, number of database operations, the amount of heap space being used, and the amount of CPU time. It is important to note that if you exceed a governor limit, your code will terminate with an unhandleable and hence unrecoverable exception. One of the integral ways in which Apex is tied to the platform is how it can access and manipulate stored records. This section will familiarize programmers with S objects. Working with data in Apex follows this simple pattern. Data is retrieved from the database. The data is then manipulated. And finally, the data is persisted to the database. An S object, or Salesforce object, refers to any object in Apex that can be stored in the Force.com platform database. Any of the predefined objects provided by the platform, or any of the objects users create through the user interface, are S objects when manipulated in Apex. Some examples of S objects are standard objects such as account, contact, and case, and custom objects created in the user interface, such as course and course delivery. There is a generic S object type that is the parent of all data objects. All concrete Salesforce objects have a base S object. Note that the generic S object abstract type can be used to represent any specific S object type. Let's take a moment and clarify some terminology. An object contains data, and you work with objects in the UI through page layouts or VisualForce pages. The data is saved as a record in the database. Data is manipulated in memory as an S object. Now let's take a look at code segment. As you examine the code on the screen, consider the following questions. Once you've had a few seconds to think about the question, click the answer button. 1. What is this code segment declaring? This is a method with a return type of void. It takes a single argument of type list, whose elements are S objects of type course underscore delivery double underscore C. 2. What do you recognize in this code segment? Line 1 is a method header, including a return type and a parameter list. The parameter list takes a list variable. Line 2 is a variable declaration of a list that is initialized by the list constructor. Line 3 is a for loop that traverses a list. Line 4 is an if statement. Line 5 is an assignment statement. Line 6 is a method to add to the list. 3. What is different from Java or C sharp? In line 4, the double equals sign is used to compare a string to a field value. In a language like Java, you'd have to use the equals method. In line 5, the string is enclosed in single quotes. In line 6, the variable name is case insensitive. In line 9, there is a DML update statement. The Force.com platform tracks dependencies between S objects used in Apex and declarative object definitions. The declarative and programmatic are tied to the platform and hence to each other. For example, if Apex code references a field of an S object, the field cannot be removed or modified in a way that will affect code in the declarative interface. When you move Apex from one environment to another, the declarative elements it references must already exist or be part of the package you are moving. Let's look at S-object naming in Apex. There is a common pattern for API names in standard objects and an alternate pattern in custom objects. Standard object API names are often the same as the object name. Custom object names end with the double underscore C suffix by default. Although most API names can be predicted, there are cases where they will be different. For example, the API name of PriceBook is PriceBook2. Some places where you can find API names are in the Schema Builder, the Setup Menu UI pages associated with an object, the Developer Console, and workbench.developerforce.com. The S-object API name is used like any other data type. When constructing an S-object, you have the option of specifying field values in the constructor. Note that using the field value list with a constructor only works with S-objects and not with objects instantiated from Apex custom classes. On which line is contact used as a variable's data type? Line 1A. On which line is contact the name of a constructor? Line 1A. On which line is contact used as a method's return data type? Line 1B. On which line is certification underscore held double underscore C used as a data type of a parameter? Line 1B. The API name of an object's field is the name used in Apex to refer to a field within an S object. Similar to customer objects, the names of custom fields end with the double underscore C suffix in Apex by default. Note that it can be difficult to find the names of relationship fields for S objects. You can do it in Workbench and Eclipse. To pull data from the database, you would perform a select statement. You will need to know the names of the fields and the name of the object. With a SQL query, you write an expression which is enclosed in brackets. Two possible return types are SObject and ListOfSObject. Note that the SObject and field names in a SQL query use the same names you use in Apex. Let's turn to referencing a relationship field on a child SObject. Each relationship field on a child object is represented by two fields of an Apex SObject. So, what you see in the UI as one field translates to two fields in Apex. Here on line 6, account ID is a field acting as a foreign key and holds the ID of the parent S object record. You also see that account is a field that is a reference to the parent S object. Predefined relationships follow a different syntactic pattern than user-defined relationships. We have seen how, in standard relationships, we have a field that acts like a foreign key and a field which is a reference to the parent S object. Likewise, in custom relationships, we have a field that acts as a foreign key. The syntax to access this field is to use the API name of the relationship. Similarly, to obtain a reference to the parent S object, use the API name of the relationship, substituting the double underscore C for double underscore R. Now let's try a little exercise. Drag the correct word or phrase from the list on the right to its correct place in the code at the bottom of the screen. Click the Submit button when you are done to see if you've placed things correctly. Select the correct type from the drop-down box for each blank. In Apex, a parent S object has a reference to a list of child S objects. A reference to a child list always uses an S to make the base name plural. Remember, predefined relationships follow a different syntactic pattern than user-defined relationships. The default reference to a parent object is set on the field in the child object. For each question, select the correct answer from the drop-down box for each blank. Each S object has a standard field of type ID for holding the record's unique system-generated ID. Both of the ID representations you see on the screen are case-sensitive. If you try to use either version in Salesforce as if they are case insensitive, you will receive an error. So why are there two versions? The 15-character version is what is stored in the database. It uses minimal storage, which is important. It can be seen in the Object Detail page's URL. If the 15-character version is treated by external systems as case insensitive, there is no guarantee of uniqueness, so comparisons may seem equal when they are not. the 18-character version is used often with the APIs. If the 18-character version is treated by external systems as case-insensitive, it is unique, so comparisons for equality will be correct. The 18-character value is the preferred representation. Note, never hard-code an ID value in any code. Here is a summary of what was covered in this module. Take a moment and read through the bullets for review.